From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we take a look at New York Democratic gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon's promise to open a Moreland Act commission to investigate corruption should she win election. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the process to replace now-disgraced former Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. And there's a controversial plan to remove a dam and drain a lake in Ulster County. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. When Democratic candidate for governor Cynthia Nixon called for a state Moreland Act commission to investigate corruption this week, she was not the first to do so. Her opponent, Governor Andrew Cuomo, also requested and created a Moreland commission to look at potential illegal activities in state government, but he disbanded it as a part of a budget deal several months later. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Nixon says if she's elected governor, she'll appoint a commission using powers under the state's Moreland Act to investigate state government for corruption. Nixon says she's reacting to a report in the Albany Times-Union. It raised questions about a healthcare company that received over $25 million in state grants after contributing money to Governor Cuomo's campaign. Blair Horner, with the government reform organization New York Public Interest Research Group, says if the commission were truly independent, it would be a good idea, following the corruption convictions of the former legislative leaders and a former top aide to Cuomo.
It's pretty clear that all of the state ethics watchdogs are not really meeting their role. There have been an unbelievable series of various scandals, both dealing with in the legislative branch as well as the executive branch. And if it wasn't for the feds, we'd know basically nothing about the vast majority of them.
The last Moreland Commission was created by Governor Cuomo in July of 2013. Cuomo, who was annoyed with the Senate and Assembly leaders for failing to agree to ethics and campaign finance reforms, vowed to fully investigate any potential illegalities.
Your mission is to put a system in place that says, A, we're going to punish the wrongdoers, and to the extent people have violated the public trust, they will be punished.
But the commission, which included several district attorneys from around the state, never finished its work. An investigation by the New York Times found the governor and his staff were accused of meddling in the commission's work and ordering commissioners to pull back from investigations that might lead to the governor or any of his associates. By that fall, Cuomo said he no longer believed the commission should investigate anything within his own executive branch, but should stick to looking at the legislature. By late March of 2014, Cuomo had agreed to end the commission's probes in exchange for a budget deal that included some ethics reforms. Cuomo at the time said he was satisfied with the agreement.
Said consistently, if we pass that law, that we would end Moreland, and we have. And I told the Moreland Commission that from day one.
In that 2014 deal, lawmakers agreed to create an independent enforcement officer at the State Board of Elections. But in April of this year, the board took steps to rein in that independent investigator. It now requires her to check with them before starting any new probes. The Moreland Commission had begun numerous investigations, and they turned those cases over to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, after Bharara requested the records. The Moreland probes helped lead to the corruption convictions of both of the legislative leaders who were in power in 2013 and the conviction this year of the governor's former closest aide, Joe Percoco, on bribery charges. Horner with NYPERG says it doesn't have to be up to Nixon to begin a probe of potential corruption in government. He says the current governor could even do it right now.
If it's Governor-elect Nixon or if it's Governor Cuomo or Governor Molinaro, whoever the heck the next governor is, it would be a good way to sort of, you know, have a clean break with the past in terms of all the problems that we've seen, both in the legislative and executive branch.
An aide to Cuomo's campaign, Liz Smith, reacted to the proposal on Twitter, calling it more political attacks, and said the commission should investigate why Nixon released just 1 year's worth of tax returns instead of 10. Nixon's idea was endorsed, also on Twitter, by Barrara, who said the first Moreland Commission should never have been disbanded and that every New Yorker should support a strong anti-corruption measure like this. Barrara, who was fired by President Donald Trump and now has a podcast, has not ruled out running for attorney general this year. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. What a difference a couple of weeks makes. First, we saw the resignation, sudden resignation, of the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman on what essentially amounts to alleged assault charges against four women he dated. Then came the interviews in the legislature this week that wrapped up for folks interested in the position. Not all that are interested stayed on or were on the list, including the public advocate from New York City, Letitia James, who now says she's interested in the position of AG, but won't seek the Liberal Working Families Party line in her campaign. Strategic move, Alan?
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff here, David. One of them is, obviously, the governor doesn't want her on the Working Families Party line, which I'm sure she resents, because he has been denied that line. And if I can't have it, then you can't have it either. I think that that is quite clear. Secondly, she knows that when the Democratic bosses nominate you, it's the kiss of death in New York. So if she runs, it would be unclear to me that she would want to run with that kiss on her head, because people don't like it in the state. And you have a bunch of people who might run for attorney general. In the meantime, you have a perfectly competent woman who is doing a great job running the attorney general's office. And so now the next big phase is going to be coming who passes signatures around. And one of the people who is most impressive to so many people is Preet Bharara. There is a big question of will he or won't he going on if he runs for, in my opinion, if he runs for attorney general, people are going to vote for him because he's the one who brought down Prococo and all of those people who were so close to the governor. And if he runs for attorney general, we all know that AG means almost governor, and he puts himself into a very powerful position in New York State. He would be a superb attorney general. There will be a lot of other people contesting, some of whom are what we could only call laughers who have applied for the job. But I suspect what you're going to find is that there will be a open primary in which a lot of good people will be running. If Bharara runs, I bet it's his for the taking.
Let's stick with Bharara for a second. There was an interesting article from Ken Lovett in the New York Daily News about the potential, quote, fusion candidacy between, well, I'll let you explain.
That's right. When John Lindsay got to be mayor of New York after all, he was a Republican, he ran on what was called a fusion ticket. You get Democrats, you get Republicans to combine. What is being asked of Bharara here by Mark Molinaro, the quite attractive, politically attractive candidate for governor on the Republican side, is that Bharara join him on a fusion ticket, meaning Bharara, who's a Democrat, and Molinaro, who's a Republican. So I'm thinking that that's not going to happen. Why should it? If Bharara wants to win, he can run a whole bunch of minor parties, but he can also run for the Democratic nomination, and I believe get it.
Let's talk about another gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic side, Cynthia Nixon, who this week promised a, quote, anti-corruption panel, basically reviving the Moreland Commission. And Preet Bharara, Alan, who of course, came right out after that and endorsed it.
Well, exactly. Cynthia Nixon is doing exactly the right thing. One of the blackest of black eyes that Cuomo has gotten in his governorship, which a lot of people remember, but not as many people as you might expect, is that he formed a crime-fighting commission, Moreland Act Commission, which he's entitled to do as the governor. And he said, wherever you go, you could go wherever you want. I don't care. Just go. Well, as soon as they got going, one of the things that got apparent is it was getting a little too close to Cuomo. So Cuomo, with no explanation, goes ahead and he says to the commission, you're fired. Get out of here. Now, in order to win this thing, and Nixon is coming up fast, she says, first thing I do is reestablish a Moreland Act commission and let them go wherever they go. It's a brilliant stroke. It's a brilliant move. Barrera is correct in supporting it. Why not? Nixon has nothing to lose.
Yeah, and she also, as you know, has kept a step ahead of the governor on the issue of legalizing marijuana. She takes the side of it being a criminal justice issue.
Well, Cuomo has always said he thought it was a gateway drug and it was not a good thing to do, and marijuana shouldn't be legalized. Out comes Nixon, and she says, legalize marijuana. Cuomo is now saying it is his view that marijuana reform is due, but a little too late for political effectiveness, because once again, Nixon has led the way with him.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Chartoff.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand called this week on the head of the U.S. Department of Agriculture to authorize $300 million in emergency relief funding for dairy farmers. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
According to the USDA monthly milk production report issued on April 23rd, New York dairy farmers received $15.60 per hundredweight for raw milk, down $3.50 from January 2017. The historically low dairy prices are translating to increased debt, and Senator Gillibrand says it's also leading to more farm closures.
Milk prices are so low that our dairy farmers are losing money on every pound of milk they produce, no matter how hard they work. This is hurting our local communities and our state. Dairy farmers have always been at the heart of New York's rural economy, but more than 1,200 dairy farms in New York have just shut down in the last decade, and many more are on the brink of failing.
The Democrat says the USDA has the authority to provide direct financial assistance to struggling agricultural sectors. She is calling on Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue to release emergency funding to dairy farms.
This is a crisis right in our own backyard. We can't wait until the next farm bill to give our dairy farmers relief. I'm asking for $300 million, which is the exact same amount that the USDA used to support cotton farmers in the South when their prices dropped earlier this year. The USDA should treat our dairy producers the same way. I want this emergency funding to go directly to the farmers who need it, so their farms can keep running and they can keep producing milk without going bankrupt.
New York's junior senator expects each dairy farm to receive several thousand dollars if the agriculture secretary agrees to release the money.
We believe that each dairy farmer, on average, would get about $8,000 in New York State. It would be direct money, direct grant money for emergency relief.
AgriMark dairy economist Bob Wellington has not seen Senator Gillibrand's request to the USDA, but notes that dairy farmers are in the fourth year of depressed prices that are not covering production costs.
They need something that's going to work to try to keep milk prices at a decent level. And I think for most farms right now, they need milk to get back above $20 a hundredweight, at least for some sustained period of time. And they haven't seen that since 2014. So, I mean, we've got to find a way to have the money come out of the marketplace. We are looking at some ideas on how to do that, but any ideas we do in regard to that is not going to result in substantially more income to farmers in the next few months. But any help they could get, I know they need and would be appreciated.
Wellington says many dairy farms are losing $10,000 or more per month. 100 weight of milk is equal to 11.6 gallons.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A plan to remove a dam and drain a lake in Ulster County continues to be controversial. We get an update from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
Environmental group Riverkeeper has weighed in on a controversial plan to remove a dam and drain Tilson Lake. A group working to save the lake takes issue with Riverkeeper's stance. And it all comes as a commission says it needs to remove the dam, which it claims does not meet safety requirements and is too costly to repair. George Jackman is Habitat Restoration Manager at Riverkeeper. He wants to see the Tilson Lake Dam removed to allow for the free flow of the Hudson River's tributaries.
All obsolete dams that don't have a justifiable reason to exist should be removed because they impair the ecological health of the river and ultimately the Hudson River, because the river flows from the sum flow of all its tributaries. And there are over 1,500 of these things. They're equivalent to a blood clot in a living organism.
Jackman wants to see a free-flowing Palmagat Kill, which originates near Lake Minnewaska, but ultimately is blocked by the Tilson Lake Dam.
What we have is a situation, you know, this is part of the public trust. First of all, rivers are part of the public trust. They're like wild animals. They should not be constrained.
The executive director of the Palisades Interstate Park Commission had sent a letter in March to homeowners near Tilson Lake, saying the Tilson Lake Dam no longer meets dam safety requirements for Class C dams, and the commission is taking steps to design and seek approval for the dam's removal with plans to restore the lake back to a natural stream corridor. Annie O'Neill is founding member of Save Tilson Lake.
This didn't start as a dam issue. It started as we don't have the money to repair it. So I think that to residents, it's a much more complex issue. You know, it's about recreational use. It's about an ecosystem that's developed by the lake. We have an amazingly extensive new bird list.
The lake is in Gardner, where the town board passed a resolution seeking to preserve the dam in Tilson Lake. Karen Schneller-McDonald is a water resources specialist and author on the subject of such resources. She says the issue is complex, and residents like O'Neill have raised valid concerns about the potential decline in property values and recreational aspects. But Riverkeeper 2, she says, has valid points, as there is value in general in removing dams and restoring ecological health to free-flowing streams and rivers. But all dam removal situations, she says, are not the same.
The ecological argument seems to be a hostage of both groups here. And from my perspective, we really don't have the massive ecological information that I would like to see to draw some good conclusions about what the effects of dam removal or of keeping the dam would be.
Riverkeepers Jackman believes there could be an almost immediate positive effect after removing the dam.
2 years ago, we removed a barrier on the Winanskill in Troy. Within 4 days, river herring showed up and started spawning in the creek. That had been blocked for over 100 years.
He notes the Tilson Lake Dam has been in place for fewer than 100 years, and removing it, he argues, would enhance habitat for aquatic invertebrates and wild trout. O'Neill, though, is concerned about what would become of a drained Tilson Lake site.
It's a 25-acre site. It's not so simple to you just bulldoze it, you just knock down the dam, and the stream will flow happily on its way.
The Palisades Interstate Park Commission's executive director has said it could cost up to $9 million to bring the dam into compliance, and after exploring options and seeking funds to do that, the commission came up empty-handed. O'Neill thinks that estimated cost is too high.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State and local leaders join recreation enthusiasts at the state capitol to recognize the area's biking, hiking, and walking trails and to call for more options. Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Officials say across New York, it's easier than ever to get from point A to point B on 2 feet or 2 wheels, thanks to initiatives to expand and connect multi-use hiking and biking trails. The Capital Region Trails Summit highlighted numerous projects, including the Empire State Trail and the Albany County Rail Trail. Democratic Assembly Member Pat Fahey calls Albany the epicenter of trails.
Biking, hiking, walking, any of those. This is not just about what's good for our health. This is a serious economic development issue with tourism directly tied to it, as well as even business recruitment, talent recruitment. We know that when businesses are scouting locations, they also need to be concerned about attracting the millennials. And they're looking for these type of extras. It's tied to the salability, if you will, of an entire region, that there is this interconnectedness, that there are these opportunities.
Jonathan Jones, Albany's Commissioner of Recreation, Youth, and Workforce Services, says the city's new skate park and playgrounds are attracting more visitors as they become links along popular bike trails.
We see an uptick not only because people need to get away from phones and realize that, you know, a sedentary lifestyle doesn't really lead to a happy lifestyle. It's a way to engage with other people. And now more than ever, there's a need to be around positive energy, and so we're seeing people who've never been together before collaborate. We're seeing partnerships that's never happened before, all because health is wealth and people are starting to live that.
Jones expects in-the-works attractions like the Skyway and Waterfront will be accessible by trail. Proponents of trails say they are essential for connecting communities, attracting new residents, and stimulating local economies. Albany area rail trails added amenities like benches, sunscreen dispensers, and bike fixing stations. CDTA and CDPHP were recognized for being bike friendly. CDTA's CEO Carm Basil says the authority understands the link between transportation and the economy.
We move people. It's up to us to develop a wider and deeper menu of options for people. Not just one way to get around, but several ways to get around, and then to ensure that they're all connected.
State officials say by 2020, 750 miles of connected trails linking New York City to the Canadian border and west to Buffalo under the moniker Empire State Trail Plan will be the nation's longest. Another run-bike-hike component is Complete Streets. Leah Golby is board president of the New York Bicycling Coalition and a former Albany Common Councilwoman. She sees the state's Complete Streets program as another pathway to improve movement in Albany.
Complete Streets are important for everybody, for people who walk, for people who drive, for people with disabilities. It includes simple things like sidewalks, and you'd be surprised, even in some of our urban cores in New York State, areas that don't currently have sidewalks. Here in the city of Albany, there are streets, you know, in the more walkable parts of the city where suddenly there's no sidewalk.
Fahey represents a large portion of Albany County, which is leading the Run Bike Hike effort upstate. Nevertheless, there are several challenges going forward.
Some are just physical challenges of widening the roads to accommodate bikes and pedestrians. Financial challenges include just getting the funding. Putting in sidewalks is expensive when they have not been there before, let alone widening streets or adding in lanes. Some of it is legislative and regulatory, authorizing electric bikes so that baby boomers or the disabled or those that want to be more ambitious can get those bikes, as well as the complete streets that you heard about, to make sure that we're doing this right when construction projects go on.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1820. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.